ओम अज्ञानतिमिरंदस्य ज्ञानांजलशलाकाय चक्षुः मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिववासवि गौरभक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। ओके, सो आई विल बी रीडिंग फ्रॉम दिस लेटर टू हंसदूता, 22nd June 1972। माई डियर हंसदूत, प्लीज एक्सेप्ट माई ब्लेसिंग्स। आई एम इन ड्यू रिसीव्ड ऑफ योर लेटर डेटेड 20th June 1972 एंड आई डिड रिसीव टू लेटर्स फ्रॉम वुल्फ्रैम ऑसेनब्रिक एंड हैन कॉस्टर डेटेड 29th May 1972, बट देर वॉज नो लेटर ऑफ रिकमेंडेशन फ्रॉम यू। सो एनी वे आई एम वेरी मच प्लीज टू एक्सेप्ट द बॉयज एज माई ड्यूली इनिशिएटेड डिसाइपल्स and their letter is enclosed herewith. Also, please find enclosed herewith 3 secret threads and 4 copies of Gayatri Mantra duly chanted by me. Now hold a fire yagya and teach the other big officers in German temples how to perform this fire yagya very perfectly and give Gayatri Mantra to Ashtarata Surabhi Dasi, Sachinanand and Chakravarti. I think you have got a copy of the tape of me reciting Gayatri Mantra, so play it them through the right ear hole with earphones. I'm very pleased to see that things are going on and that new centers are opening many in Germany. Now I am feeling very much inclined for retiring behind the scenes to translate my Srimad Bhagavatam. This means that now you all leaders, especially GBC members, must become very much responsible and do the work, and that I am doing to the same standard. So I want you leaders especially to become very absorbed in the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and become yourselves completely convinced and free from all doubt. On this platform you shall be able to carry on the work satisfactorily, but if there is lack of knowledge or if there is forgetfulness, everything will be spoiled in time. So especially you must encourage the students to read our books throughout the day as much as possible and give them all good advice how to understand the books and inspire them to study the things from every point of view. In this way, by constantly engaging our tongues in the service of the Lord, either by discussing the philosophy or by chanting Hare Krishna, the truth is that Krishna himself will reveal himself to us and we shall understand how to do everything properly. Now we have got so many students and so many temples, but I am fearful that if we expand too much in this way, that we shall become weakened and gradually the whole thing will become lost, just like milk. We may thin it more and more with water for cheating the customer, but in the end it will cease to be no longer milk. Better to boil the milk now very vigorously and make it thick and sweet. That is the best process. So let us concentrate on training our devotees very thoroughly in the knowledge of Krishna consciousness from our books, from tapes. By discussing always and in so many ways, instruct them in the right propositions. I hope this meets you and your good wife Himavati in good health, and I shall be arriving in London sometime on the 5th July. So you may all come to London at your convenience and see me there. Okay, so here Prabhupada is actually mentioning that how important is to train the devotees now. Although we have preached Krishna consciousness, we have made new devotees, but actually more important than that is actually to train the devotees. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this training aspect, you know, this is something I think we are also doing it, and in some way, and you know, the objective is that all the devotees, if they can come together and discuss, they can read Prabhupada's books together, they can discuss from every point of view, every angle of view. This is what Prabhupada wanted. And so this is called the process of boiling the milk, which is that, you know, you keep milking, you know, I mean, you keep boiling, heating the milk as much as possible so that the milk will become, it is very tasteful, you know, when you drink the milk. But if you keep adding water in the milk, then the quality will be hampered.
So Prabhupada is comparing that to expanding, expanding, expanding. So our focus is not just to expand, but to also train the devotees thoroughly so that they will make. In fact, I think we have discussed this similar kind of letter in the past, where Prabhupada mentions that we should now train devotees thoroughly, and by training these devotees whom we have made devotees earlier, later on they will make new devotees. So this is the process. Okay, so it's a chain reaction kind of thing. So not that, you know, we don't make devotees, but it is, I think, the foremost responsibility for any senior devotee is that they must train others also, so that they also can share Krishna consciousness with others, and they can also train them. Because, so what is the meaning of training? To provide knowledge, to make them understand the philosophy, to answer their questions, to make, you know, sure that every aspect of Krishna consciousness they know and they don't have any doubts. Or even if they have any doubts, those are very, extreme doubts, like, you know, which are probably, there is no answer to these questions. Okay, so, but as far as possible, whatever we know, we must try to clear their doubts. And obviously, the process is not just, you know, going to someone and asking questions and getting the answers. The process is humble service, you know, Tadvidhi Pranipatena Pariprasthina Sevaya. So this is the process, that we inquire submissively and render service to them. So that is the reason we have a concept of Guru. Okay, so this is very important. In fact, you know, sometime I also feel that ISKCON is expanding too much, and probably it should not expand too much like that. Instead of that, whatever expansion has happened till now, I think we should stop it. So maybe, I mean, you know, this is my feeling. Obviously, like, I am very insignificant in ISKCON, but at least I was feeling this, that, and because, you know, I see there is lacking in many areas, in many centers, in many ISKCON temples, there is a lot of lacking in terms of culture, in terms of etiquette, in terms of philosophy. Not each and every devotee is thorough with that. So I was thinking that for 2 years, just as, you know, we are having this quarantine period right now, so for 2 years or 3 years, ISKCON should also go into quarantine, which means that no more external preaching, no more outside preaching, no more attraction to new devotees. Only focus on those who have become devotees. Give them time. Because what I see is that not many devotees are able to give time to other devotees, to that quality time. And because of that, you know, the relationships have become impersonal. Mostly the senior devotees, they are focusing on majorly on services, and they are so occupied with their services that they don't have any time to sit with other devotees and to discuss openly and freely with them. And see, it's a rare situation where a devotee will get answers to questions from one person. It's very rare like that. We have to jump at multiple places, you know, because you cannot expect that one devotee will be multi-talented. Or even though in the same area also, there are so many different topics. If you only consider Shastra, there are many, many topics in Shastra. So you cannot expect that one devotee will have thorough knowledge of each and every topic under the Shastra. And that is the reason, you know, we require multiple devotees also to take guidance. So, so I think that and at the same time, not just about, you know, questioning and answering, but I think they should also be thoroughly trained in terms of their way that they should approach the authorities, they should approach the Guru, and they should learn all these etiquettes. So these are very important aspects. Like, typically, you know, you can say that when the Lord himself is actually admitted into Gurukul, so being himself the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but still he wants to learn. Right? Yeah, so this is actually very important, that the entire ISKCON should go into quarantine for 2-3 years and only focus, very thoroughly they should focus on training devotees. Quality training, and obviously the devotees that should come out from that should be very exemplary in terms of everything, not just Shastra. Because if you only focus on Shastra, then people somehow, you know, devotees might become a bit harsh or aggressive, or maybe proud about their own. They might cultivate these kind of feelings. So it is also important that they should be trained in all these areas properly. Okay, and then it is like, you know, boiling the milk. And then, you know, because quality attracts quantity also later on. Automatically quantity will be attracted, because the type of sadhana a devotee will have, the type of character a devotee is, he will automatically attract many other people. But right now what is happening? So much expansion without focusing on the internal cultivation of a devotee. Externally they might be able to, you know, they are probably preaching, but the success is not so high. And even if it is good enough, you know, probably they are getting some success, but they can't expect quality. You know, the quality will be compromised for sure. So here, by, you know, reading Prabhupada letters, so he has written these kind of letters multiple times. And so it is quite clear that Prabhupada was not just focusing on expansion, he was also basically trying to convey that every devotee should be trained thoroughly also. Okay, so in fact, in some of the letters, Prabhupada says that this training is more important service than actually creating new devotees. So basically, see, we have thousands and thousands of devotees in ISKCON, but if you consider on a base, you know, on the level of trainers or expert, those who are expert in particular areas, they are very few. There are very few devotees. And so obviously, it is very difficult. And see, that is the reason, why this tendency of jumping? we tend to jump because we want to hear from so many people. And why we want to do that? Because we are not getting it from one person. We are not satisfied from one person. So naturally there is a tendency to seek out knowledge somewhere else. And what is happening in this process, that okay, devotees are going out, they are seeking knowledge, but in return they don't want to invest anything. They have received help, that's it. They are done with it. And this is the nature of, so there are pros and cons of online preaching also, because you can connect to any devotee through our online, you know, classes and all. You can hear from them, but also at the same time keep a distance from them. So actually this process itself, there is some kind of lacking. It's actually not the right approach, because right approach is basically, if you are inspired by a devotee, you connect to that devotee, you hear from that devotee for a long time, and you also render some service. So this is the process, and this is how actually the training has to go. Otherwise, when I took this class in Rajiv Prabhu's house, I had a question for the devotees, that why are you only stick to ISKCON? Why you are only in ISKCON? Why don't you hear from outside also? Why you don't contribute outside ISKCON also? Why don't you render service to other Vaishnava organizations also? So this is my question to you all. What is the answer for this? Why are you only in ISKCON? Why are you only contributing to ISKCON? Why not outside of ISKCON? There are other Vaishnava organizations. They are all bona fide. So what is the answer? Let's say, you know, tell me one thing. If devotees are hearing from Prabhupada, but they are doing service for some other parampara or sampradaya, whether they are earning or whether they are doing physical service, whatever their service they are offering, they are doing it for some other parampara, but they are hearing from Prabhupada. Is this the right way? If you are receiving help from Prabhupada, okay, throughout your life, will you go and donate to some other organization?
Obviously not, Prabhu. We are not supposed to.
Yeah, everyone knows that. It's a logic. So, So see,
Prabhuji, I have one question here.
Yeah.
Yeah, if Srila Prabhupada gives a very wonderful teaching on service to cows.
And service to?
Service to cows, protection for cows.
Yeah.
And the devotee gets properly gets oriented towards the cause. And so then he goes to various goshalas around. And then he contributes, does some seva for their protection. So then is that, I mean, he has to go only to some goshala?
Your voice is breaking a bit. But I think I got your question. What you are asking is,
my point was that he go only to ISKCON Goshala or he can go to any Goshala and do the cow seva. Because the point of Srila Prabhupada was to serve cows, right?
See, then this question is not limited to Goshala. It can be, I can also say that why to distribute Prabhupada books? I can also distribute some Ramanujacharya books. I can distribute any Vaishnava who is a bona fide devotee, I can distribute his books also.
Srila Prabhupada ji, yeah, but Srila Prabhupada ji would be stressing on the saving of cows. Now, cow might be in danger in various areas. So, I will not look at whether ISKCON Goshala is serving the cow. If I see the cow is in danger, then since I am oriented by understanding from Srila Prabhupada, I will move ahead and I see that opportunity and I will try and take care of it in my own limited way. So I think that is a good application.
What you are saying, if you are seeing a cow is in danger and if you are helping the cow, then that definitely is a service to the cow. So that is not different from, but my point is, when you are connected to a teacher or a guru, okay, so then when you hear from the guru, when you are getting everything from the guru, your obligation is towards the guru first. So, now Prabhupada has created many avenues for cow protection within ISKCON. There are many, many temples where cows are maintained, and I think everyone is aware of that. So, our first obligation is towards the cows which are there in ISKCON. So, we obviously will contribute there first. And then, obviously, if we see tomorrow on the street a cow is in danger, then we'll protect the cow. You know, obviously, that is not different from serving the cows. But our major responsibility is towards our guru. So when we have ample opportunity for cow protection within ISKCON, any devotee, I think, they would prefer to donate their money in that organization which they are attached to, they are connected to. It's a obligation, loyalty to our Acharya and Guru. So basically, for any project, whether it is book distribution, cow protection, Harinam Sankirtan, deity worship, anywhere. See, now we have thousands of temples also. Outside ISKCON also we have thousands of temples. So does it mean that, just because they are also worshipping Vishnu that, we donate to them more? No, the major donation has to go to our own Guru Parampara because we are receiving the most from them. It's obvious, right? I mean, when you are in a family, your father is providing you, the first thing you will do is you serve your father first. You will not try to serve some, another person who might also be doing wonderful. That's a different thing. But for you, you are going to serve your own father first. That's the obligation and responsibility of every person. And that's a system. Krishna has created that kind of system. So loyalty towards the guru is an important thing. Yeah, so
also Prabhuji, guru gives loyalty towards guru's instruction when the guru is teaching you the philosophy. So you have to work by the philosophy. So it is essential to stand by the philosophy or to make sure that the service goes to guru only. I mean, how is it? Because this world is it's a huge world out here. and one may be involved in so many circumstances in this world. So the teachings of the Guru are to be taken forward, and the life as it comes to you, you have to try and apply those teachings to the best of your ability, or it, you have to make sure that everything is going towards for the service of Guru only. I mean, life can come to you through so many channels, na?
No, but see, this is what the, I mean, you know, I have already given you a very simple example that you are in a family, your father has provided you everything. So it's natural, no, that any son would feel that I would like to serve my father first. I would like to satisfy him first. And if I have more energy, more facilities, then later on, you know, I can do other things also. But you know, when I have my father, I have to take care of me first. That's a natural thing for any child.
Certainly, so see, I completely agree that taking care of the gurus is 100%, the loyalty has to be there. But I'm saying, along with that, as life presents to you through different modes, we cannot shun that. I mean, that when it comes to you, it's like Krishna's approach to you through that, and so therefore you take the teachings of the Guru and apply.
See, what you are saying, you know, is I can understand. And so one more thing is there, that is the reason you have been, Krishna has also sent you a Guru, and Krishna has also sent you Guru Sadhu Shastra. So we have to, at certain point, we have to also use our intelligence to filter out certain things, okay? And if you are not able to filter out, or if you are confused, then you have to take help of Guru Sadhu Shastra, that in such situation, what am I supposed to do? But if you think that, okay, Krishna has given you a channel, but if you do not consult someone, then who knows, you know, whether Krishna, maybe Krishna is sending you the channel to test you, whether you are really committed, loyal, or whether, you know, you get a, you know, attracted to other things, you know, also. So maybe that's a test for you also. So it's not necessary that every time Krishna may send channels and we recognize like that. But so sometimes we have to use intelligence, and then we have to filter out also. Like, you know, there are multiple projects in ISKCON, and so it's not that devotees, they, now you know, we are also speaking about ISKCON, within ISKCON. So what to speak of outside, but even within ISKCON, there are so many projects. But I am pretty sure that devotees, they don't distribute their Lakshmi in so many projects, right? So, you know, even if someone will come to us asking for donation, asking for some kind of help, we have to see the circumstance. You know, if we have not, whatever our commitment is towards our, you know, towards a project or towards a particular service that we are doing regularly, if that is coming in between, then obviously we filter it out. Then it's not necessary that we have to accept each and everything that comes on its way. So yeah, now see, there will be emergencies. So now emergencies, these are different, you know, these are like you know, this is something which is acceptable, you know, which obviously anyone will help in terms of emergencies. But there are situations where it is not necessary these are emergencies. So, you know, that discrimination ability one has to have, and intelligence one has to use, what we hear from Guru Sadhu Shastra. That is the reason, if you see in the history also, all the disciples of their gurus, they are very loyal and committed. And that is the reason we have a parampara. Otherwise, there is no question of a parampara. So now, see, now the point is that it is Prabhupada who has given, it is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur who gave us organization, like for example, Gaudiya Math. And now Prabhupada also gave us organization like ISKCON. Okay, and so at least we say that, okay, within ISKCON, you know, you have, like, you take siksha from anywhere within ISKCON. But then finally we realize that, okay, ultimately, if we hear from so many people, we get confused because there are differences of opinions amongst various devotees, and the way they, you know, the way they treat the disciples or the devotees, it's very subjective also. The way they will emphasize certain things, the way they will, you know, stress on certain points, or maybe, you know, train in certain way, that is all different. So each and every devotee is individual, so they will have that kind of emphasis also. So now, so gradually what happens, you know, everything becomes, you know, it becomes limited ultimately. Like, finally, when you go down the line, things start becoming very limited, because the principle is that wherever you are connected, wherever you are serving, wherever you are getting help, you know, it is our, see, any sincere devotee would feel that I would like to help, because if you have received so much, then definitely you want to help. So this is the process, right? And when you start helping out, then you will understand and realize that, okay, now I cannot help in an unlimited way. Even I am restricted in certain things. Okay, so then you channelize your things in a limited manner. And then obviously we also take into account emergencies, you know, emergency situations, they are different. So it's not, you know, that time obviously we do the needful. So we are not so much concerned about, you know, how it will affect and all that. But yeah, for example, you know, if a devotee is dying, and or if a devotee is very close to you, and if he requires a lot of help financially, then obviously, you know, we go ahead and we help that devotee. You know, if we have a very strong relationship with that devotee, then we'll definitely help the devotee. So in such kind of situation, it is obvious that, so we are not talking about exceptional cases here. We are not talking about emergencies, but in general, we are talking about our commitment to our parampara and our acharya. Okay, and then finally, it will also boil down to our diksha and siksha gurus, or whichever temple a devotee is connected to, whichever authority a devotee is connected to. So this is how it is channelized. Okay, correct. Now, see, so the idea is, the principle is, that majority of the earning that you are getting, you must donate it to your immediate connection, where you are getting most inspiration from. And then obviously, you know, whenever you go to different places, you also can donate there. But it should not be on a higher level, like that, you know, the way you are donating. Majority of your seva, majority of your donation should go where you are most inspired, where you are most connected. Okay, and then the remaining donation or remaining services you can do at different places, depending on the situation, you know, depending on time, place, circumstance, and depending whether that is affecting your main service or not. Okay, so see, that is the reason for these things. It is very much essential. Devotees, they have to have proper knowledge and guidance on this, because otherwise they will be misdirected in certain areas, and there are chances that unknowingly offenses might be committed in this process also. So anyways, you know, coming, so I hope that, you know, it makes sense, you know, what I'm saying.
Yes.
Okay, so now again coming back to the letter of Prabhupada. So we just started with the purification and the concept of training devotees, guiding the devotees. This is what Prabhupada actually wanted. So he is calling this process as boiling the milk thoroughly instead of thinning the milk. Okay, and the part of boiling the milk is also that you teach devotees knowledge, you provide knowledge to devotees, you train them thoroughly in all areas. Okay, so I was saying that it is also necessary that ISKCON should also go into some kind of quarantine situation, so that devotees, senior devotees, those who have knowledge, they can actually train other devotees also very nicely. They should give them time. They should sit with them. They should give their time. They should give, because see, devotees are not just bothered about Shastra. They are not just bothered about knowledge, or they are not just bothered about serving, you know, like how can we serve and all. But in three areas they require some kind of support, and that is body, mind, words. So in these three areas, devotees, they require a lot of support from other devotees, from senior devotees. And that is basically, you know, that is the reason this counseling system is, you know, established. So it is not a, you know, something that a devotee goes and counsels someone just because they are disturbed. Counseling system, the name, it might be a misnomer, but basically it means that, okay, if devotees, they are in problem, we are there to help, we are there to guide you in each and every area. So whether it is material, whether it is spiritual, because the fact that we are sadhakas, we are conditioned, so we require support. And because, you know, the material connection is also very important to us. If that connection is broken, that will affect our spiritual life also very severely. So that is the reason, from all aspects, we have to train the devotees. And it's extremely important. Like, you know, just like in the army also, in the defense, you know, they cannot just, you know, like a neophyte cannot just enter the army and the next day will go and fight the war. He has to be trained for at least a couple of years. Then he will be sent. And depending on his caliber, he will be sent in a different role at different places. Okay. So there is a lot of testing done when someone goes to fight a war. And so similarly here also, there is a lot of testing which is required for devotees to find out what is the level of their tolerance, what is the level of their sadhana. And then, you know, once they are thorough with this, then they can fight with the world. So it's very, very important actually. Prabhupada mentions this many times in his letters. Okay, so any more comment on this or any question?
No, Prabhuji.
And you know, one more thing, you know, the advantage of the system is that once you get trained, you can also use this training to train others. That is the biggest advantage. It creates a chain, you know, or a chain reaction, you can say, in a nuclear bomb. It creates a chain reaction, and that chain reaction will not just give quantity, it will also give quality. It's so important. See, because here we are in the process of making leaders. Like, especially Radhesham Prabhu's project in Pune, his project is basically to create leaders. So what does that mean? So a leader is the one who is, you know, whose level of sadhana is high, who is self-motivated, self-inspired, and he knows, he is expert in multiple areas so that he can guide devotees, he can train them. And so this is what we actually require. We have to train ourselves, and then we have to also train others. And this is, you know, right from the beginning Prabhupada said that whatever you have got from me, now you share with others. So it is like that, you know, very simple. And I think this will create a much more stronger community. You know, I will tell you, I wanted to reveal this at the end of our Leela classes, but just because this topic has come up of training, I want to say that many devotees, you know, because now we are in ISKCON, so we'll come across many devotees, and some devotees, and you know, because of the individual identity, many devotees, they have difference of opinion. To the extent that they have difference of opinion about a very important topic also. Which, you know, if you hear, you will be really shocked. So see, this is just because there is a lack of training. Now, what is happening? Nowadays, everyone in the name of difference of opinion, whatever they think, whatever they say, they feel, okay, it's all right. It's just because we are individuals, so it's a different opinion. Now see, generally, Rupa Goswami clearly mentions that when it comes to principles, then it is the same for everyone. But when it comes to details, like, you know, the method of how to do it, in which way we should do it, that is called details. So this detail, when it comes to details, it can be different for everyone. But principles should be the same. But now what has happened in ISKCON, unfortunately, even over principles, there are different opinions. And why? Because the simple fact is that Prabhupada is not there. So now Prabhupada, initially what used to happen? Any disciple used to go to Prabhupada and ask him. And Prabhupada would have immediately clarified it. Finished. So they all accepted. Now the problem is, obviously they are, you know, their affection towards Prabhupada is always there. But different God brothers, they have different opinions about many things which Prabhupada said. So how do we understand this? You know, it's very confusing. And now let's talk about, you know, if you have a Diksha Guru and if you have a Siksha Guru, and now these both gurus, they have different opinion amongst each other, and both are important for you because you have been getting equal guidance from both of them. So then you know, what is the principle here? What are you going to follow? Who are you going to follow? So this is the current major problem in ISKCON, that difference of opinion, in the name of that, many things have started. And I think, you know, now they have entered into the area of principles also, where principles also, devotees, they differ. Some say, oh no, this is a principle. Some will say, no, this is a detail. You know, so this is a very, and I think what would happen, you know, if this is not resolved, in the future, ISKCON will be divided. So we have very advanced Vaishnavas in our ISKCON group, organization. That is the reason it is connected, because they always, put Prabhupada's instruction at the top. And you know, because Prabhupada said that your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate with each other. So ultimately, even in spite of differences, they will accept it and they will cooperate. That's how it is going on. But now, just imagine, tomorrow if devotees who have the spirit of passion or envy, or they are goal oriented rather than, you know, or maybe they are project oriented rather than people oriented or devotees oriented, if they are project oriented or if they are envious or if they have some anarthas, if these kind of people, if they come on the leadership, can just imagine what is going to happen. So it is extremely important to learn first that every devotee in ISKCON, they must have that kind of loyalty, and they have to be very faithful and loyal to Prabhupada. If that is not the center, no, the entire movement will be finished. And so, you know, Prabhupada himself quotes this, the Shastra itself talks about this, that implicit faith in the spiritual master and the Lord simultaneously. So now here we know that implicit faith means what? You know, so implicit faith means it has to be a very strong, very, very deep, firm faith in the spiritual master words. So that kind of training has to be given, that you have the Shastras, but when Shastra is talking about certain things, certain topics, you must know how to filter it. You cannot supersede the Shastra from the Guru. The Shastra should not supersede the Guru. If that happens, everything is finished. And see, that is the reason some of Prabhupada's disciples who are learning Sanskrit, they started thinking that Prabhupada made mistakes and Prabhupada did not translate properly. So then they started offering their own translations, and then after some time they all left ISKCON, just because the fact that they thought that, you know, Prabhupada was an ordinary devotee and he has made mistakes in his commentaries or in translations. So now maybe they were good preachers, but because they were not deeply connected, deeply rooted with this principle that Prabhupada is a center and one must have implicit faith in the spiritual master, you know, they left ISKCON. right? I mean, so that is the reason this aspect is extremely important. The focus right from the beginning has to be education and support, help and support to the devotees, and train them in the right direction. So just as you know, we want Krishna in the center, that means we also must know that the spiritual master should be the center. Otherwise we are going to be on the wrong track. You know, it will be a very difficult situation for us. Okay, so I hope, you know, why I gave an elaborated, you know, explanation on this topic, because of its seriousness, you know, that the seriousness to train other devotees also, it's very important. And I think that is actually the main role of a guru. So without providing knowledge, education, there is no need of a guru, or that person is not a guru. In fact, the meaning of the word guru itself means a guru is heavy with knowledge. And whoever instructs is a guru. And a guru is the one who instructs. So vice versa. That is the definition of guru. So without instructing, without providing knowledge, there is no question of becoming a guru. So a guru has to be knowledge oriented, in the sense that he has to provide knowledge, he has to provide training. If he is not doing it, if he is not doing that, then that means he has some ulterior motive. His purpose is something different. He is not a guru. So is this clear? Any questions on this? Okay. So Ujwala Mataji, would you like to continue the next article?
Thank you, Roji. Prabhu, the ones which you forwarded, right?
Because yeah, so we have read the letter to Hamsa. So after that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Roji. Yeah, this is Mahatma Das Prabhuji's letter. I think he has commented. In the summer of 1971, all the devotees from Vancouver went to the Rathayatra in San Francisco. When we arrived, I heard that in the evening there was a temple president's meeting with Srila Prabhupada. Up to this point, I had only seen Prabhupada giving class. I had never been with Prabhupada in an intimate setting or on a morning walk. So the whole day of Rathayatra, I was thinking, what is this temple president's meeting? Is it some type of corporate managerial meeting where there is going to be policies and strategies set? That was the impression I had of a managerial meeting. I thought Prabhupada would set some policies and standards, show us how to take care of our books, how to organize, and so forth.
How to okay, take Mataji, care of... I just wanted to interrupt because we have already finished this. Because last time we had forwarded okay. this, I think I had posted this article, and I think we have already covered this. So let me just check, you know, which articles are remaining.
The next comes Dayananda.
Mataji, so you can read. So next article will be Rajiv Prabhu's forward article. That Swayambhu.
Okay, fine. Swayambhu. Prabhupada and two or three devotees were walking back from the square near the British Museum. I said, does the Pope make spiritual advancement? Prabhupada immediately said, yes, because he is engaged in God's work. It was quite a surprise because the Pope doesn't follow the regulative principles. But Prabhupada was very definite about it.
Yeah, so this is a broad way of actually anchoring someone mm-hmm. in their spiritual advancement. So somehow the Pope is also anchored by Prabhupada that he is also connected to God to some level. So in spite of not following the regulative principle, see, that is the reason we must know that the principle or the Swarup Lakshan of Bhakti is rendering devotional service or the limbs of Bhakti. But all these rules and regulations, they are just assisting Bhakti. They are not Bhakti in itself. Okay. So in that sense, Prabhupada has made very clear that even the Pope can actually make advancement because he is engaged in God's work. So in spite of not following regulatory principles, even he can make advancement. So gradually he will come to a point where he will start following the rules and regulations. But because he is engaged in God's work, which is the primary element of bhakti, these are all secondary things. Okay, in fact, not even cultural limbs of bhakti. These are external things. So varnashram is also external, but it is just because whatever is helping in our Krishna consciousness, we accept it, and whatever does not help, we reject it. So in that sense, varnashram and these regulations help us. So that's the reason we accept it. But for someone who is on a transcendental platform, nothing applies. Okay. And those who are not yet on that transcendental platform, but at least they are engaged in God's service directly by chanting names of God or by being connected to some degree in the service of God, they can also make spiritual advancement. So is this clear? Any questions? Okay, Mataji, you can go ahead.
Yes, Prabhu. Ashwamati Nandan. Once in Melbourne, Prabhupada was walking through the park when he stopped and said, "All sound is transcendental to a pure devotee." He pondered that and walked on. I said, "Srila Prabhupada, are you saying that these car horns are transcendental to a pure devotee?" Prabhupada said, "Yes."
Yeah, so you know, see, that is the reason Prabhupada actually heard Krishna's name everywhere. This is the status of a Uttama Adhikari. This is the status of a pure devotee coming from the spiritual world. Okay, so he, see, and we have learned that what is the characteristics of Uttama Adhikari, that he can see Krishna in everyone. And this is one of the examples of how he can actually see Krishna in everyone and everything. So now, no matter whether the object is dull or conscious, but a pure devotee can actually see Krishna everywhere. So even apparently also, externally it may seem that it's a car horn, but Prabhupada actually can hear Krishna's voice. Right? Because everything, he does not see anything separate from Krishna.
Yes.
One time Prabhupada was asked by Shyam Sundar Prabhu that, Prabhupada, can you see God? Prabhupada said, "Yes, I can see God." And then one time there was an argument between a Christian and Prabhupada, going back and forth. And Prabhupada immediately chastised him. He said that, "What are you saying? What nonsense are you saying? Can you see God?" And he said, "No, I cannot." And Prabhupada said, "I can see God. So speak from that platform." And that immediately the Christian went bluff. He couldn't answer anything. So Prabhupada could... It's a fact. Prabhupada saw Krishna face to face. Prabhupada himself said this many times. You know, in one particular conversation, it was Rameshwar Prabhu who asked Prabhupada that, "Prabhupada, what happens when one is on the level of Uttama Adhikari? Do they get instructions from within, as you have mentioned many times?" And Prabhupada said, "No. You know, they can actually hear Krishna." So again, Rameshwar Prabhu got bewildered. He said, "Does it mean that, you know, Krishna in the form of super soul, he provides answers?" Prabhupada said, "No. Krishna has a personal conversation with us. He tells us directly what, when, why we should do certain things." So, and then, you know, as you know, Prabhupada also said that Krishna wrote his books, the BVD purports. So from all this, very clear that Prabhupada was able to perceive Krishna in everything. Okay, so any comments on this? Okay, Mataji, you can continue.
Amogha, once I was trying to understand the 400,000 species of human life. I asked Prabhupada, "Those 400,000 types of humans, are they on this planet? Are they divided by countries? Does it mean the Chinese, Japanese, the Americans?" Prabhupada said, "No, you are thinking of this planet, but the Srimad Bhagavatam is speaking of the entire universe."
Yes. So generally devotees or outside people, they ask this question that what is this 8.4 billion species of life? We do not see them in the material world. But actually these species, they are existing right from the heavenly planets to the lower planetary systems, the 14 worlds. So they are distributed. Okay, and I think before couple of months ago, some devotees had shared some graphical image where they were, you know, they had shown the division of the of 8.4 million species of, or 84 lakh species of life. They had divided the entire thing and they had shown how they are divided. So they are existing, you know, in the entire system.
And also, Prabhu, they say that these 400 types of human species also, depending on the consciousness or the moods, right?
Yes, yes, Mother, yeah. So, correct. So, the 4 lakh species of human forms also. So, basically now, where do we see this 4 lakh species? So, these are actually right from top to the lower planet, the bottom of the lower, the entire material creation. Okay. So, it is the 14 planetary system. It is not just in the material world. Okay. Yeah, Mother, you can continue.
Okay. Next, letter to Dayananda, New York, 7 July 1972, Los Angeles. My dear Dayananda, please accept my blessings. I beg to acknowledge receipt of your letters dated June 26, 1972 and July 4, 1972, and I have noted the contents very carefully. Now my advice is that you take your family to San Francisco and become the president there, because Keshava wants to change, and I think he has liked it in London very much. So he may come here immediately while I'm here and help me to get one very nice temple here. What do you think of this proposal? Yes, reading of my books will help you. Philosophy must be there. But if you do not also apply the philosophy by practicing in all temple affairs, like rising early, attending Mangalarti, performing devotional service, then simply learning the philosophy will have no effect. Therefore, my suggestion is that you should take charge of the San Francisco affairs, which are already in good order, and live nicely with your family in Krishna consciousness, because you have got tendency to manage and also good experience and ability. Hoping this will meet you in good health, your ever well-wisher, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami.
Yeah, so here also, Prabhupada is emphasizing the need for practical service. Now, without practical service, there is no effect of philosophy, very clearly stated by Prabhupada. Because the purpose of getting knowledge or getting the understanding of philosophy is that we can serve Krishna faithfully, loyally, in a very regulated way, in a dedicated way. So that is the purpose. So basically, if the goal or the purpose is not served, then what is the meaning of putting the efforts? Right? So every philosophy or every knowledge has to be practically implemented. There has to be practical service. Otherwise, there is no question. That is the reason Krishna just does not say Tadvidhi Prani Pratyena Pari Prashnena. It does not stop there. It stops at Sevaya. So without service, there is no question of, you know, knowing the philosophy. See, ultimately you cannot, although you might accumulate knowledge, but the conclusion of that knowledge will not be revealed to you if you do not serve. And that is the intention of the Shastra also. Right? So when you start serving, then these revelations will come to you. See, that's a very interesting point. I just sent two memories of two disciples of Prabhupada, to Giriraj Maharaj and to Brahmatirtha, just today only I sent. And immediately Giriraj Maharaj responded to me that it's beautiful and thanks for sharing with us. So, you know, what is that? It is basically Tamal Krishna Maharaj is mentioning that Prabhupada studied the Srimad Bhagavatam every day when he was in the Grihastha Ashram for 4 hours. You know, every day for 4 hours he was studying Srimad Bhagavatam when he was in Grihastha Ashram. Okay. So he, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, is saying that so Prabhupada learned because of attaining knowledge and at the same time because of revelation from Krishna. And then he also says that we generally know about Prabhupada's after ISKCON life. It means that, you know, when ISKCON was created, after that we know who is Prabhupada. But who is Prabhupada before he created ISKCON or his grihastha days or what he used to do, what, and so he mentions that we do not know Krishna's relation, Prabhupada's relationship with Krishna in the beginning days. And then he says that, so Prabhupada learned through two ways, through his own personal efforts and through Krishna's revelation to him. And so this is actually the way a devotee, has, you know, they will acquire knowledge, and that knowledge will be realized and it will be implemented. Okay, so this is the process, that you put efforts, you serve, and Krishna will reveal himself to you. And then, see, that is the reason in the first article also Prabhupada mentions, train other devotees very thoroughly and then Krishna will personally, face to face, appear and he will answer your questions. Something like that he says, right? So in, you know, this, in another letter also he says the same thing, that Krishna will personally appear to the devotee and he will answer all the questions. But one has to be sincere and one has to be surrendered to Krishna. So the process is of revelation and service. So putting efforts and waiting for the Lord's reciprocation. This is the process. Okay, any comments or question?
Clear, Prabhuji.
Okay, so any other devotee would like to continue reading? Rajiv Prabhu, you would like to read? Or Angel Mataji? I think I have not heard Angel Mataji since a long time. Are you there, Mataji?
Yes.
Yeah, so would you like to read? Okay.
On a morning walk in Hawaii, Bali Mardan said, "Look at those clouds, Srila Prabhupada. They look like birds." Srila Prabhupada said, "Yes. There are birds bigger than this that perch on planets and lay eggs while flying through outer space." I didn't know what all that meant. Another time, Prabhupada said, "Why have they taken all the coconuts off the trees?" The devotees answered, "Srila Prabhupada, they think that the coconuts are going to fall on someone's head and kill them." Srila Prabhupada said, "That is not possible. Coconuts have eyes."
That's so funny. So are you hearing this for the first time? I think maybe many devotees are hearing this for the first time.
Yes.
How many of you knew that coconut has eyes? How many of you knew that there are birds which can fly from one planet to another planet and they can lay eggs in those planets?
Birds
from
one planet to another?
Huh? Not able to hear.
Birds from one planet to another never fly.
Yeah, yeah.
Birds going across continents we must have heard, but not planets.
What you have heard?
Birds flying across continents.
Yeah, I think there is another article shared by another disciple, and Prabhupada, I think he names Garuda is one of the in that category of bird that can fly from one planet to another planet and also lay off its egg in each of these planets. And there's, you know, there are these kind of birds that are existing, but we are not able to see, we are not able to perceive that. So yeah, and you know, coconuts, they have eyes. No. So I think probably this is true. You know, I don't think that Prabhupada was just joking up. Maybe it is possible that it was a joke, but I feel that the way Prabhupada said, and because Bhavatarini Mataji did not comment on this, that Prabhupada was just joking. So I believe that what Prabhupada said, maybe it's true. You know, because we know that
we heard about this coconut problem. Like they say, like if you sit under the coconut tree, the coconut will fall either side, but not on your head, definitely no. And the end part
of
the coconut,
that?
One side, I heard the three, these things will be there. No, normally we call in our language also like eyes of that coconut.
Yeah.
I mean, after opening that outer, what do you call, fiber and everything, the inside one, you'll find these three, these things. Spot. That one we heard.
Okay. So you are already aware of it. Okay. I mean, it is quite logical that generally we don't see this happening because there are so many coconut trees around. And, you know, I knew one, you know, one time when I was in my mama's place, long time back when I was a child. So that time we were having cricket matches. And one time the coconut fell on my cousin's hand. And so he got injured that time. But maybe, you know, purposefully probably the coconut might have fallen. Because he must have committed some kind of, you know, karma for which he got the reaction. But yeah, but in general, we don't see that coconuts, they keep falling on people's head. That would be really funny, you know. So probably it is true, you know, that because, and coconuts are also, finally, they are living entities. So it is possible that they have probably more developed consciousness than other fruits and other plants, other vegetables. Okay. Yeah, okay. Angel Mataji, you can continue.
So the next one is, I think, posted on 9th April. Is it posted on 9th April? 7th could you post here? Yeah. Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam.
No, this is, yeah, 7th April, yeah.
In our preaching work also, we deal with so much property and money and so many books bought and sold. But because these dealings are all pertain to Krishna conscious movement, they should never be considered material. That one is absorbed in thoughts of such management does not mean that he is outside of Krishna consciousness. If one rigidly observes the regulative principle of chanting 16 rounds of the Mahamantra every day, his dealings with the material world for the sake of spreading the Krishna conscious movement are not different from the spiritual cultivation of Krishna consciousness.
Again, very important point that those who are taking the service of management, those who are taking some kind of leadership position, authoritative position in ISKCON, and they are taking that responsibility, so it is not outside of, although it seems that, and yesterday only I gave the example of how Tamal Krishna Maharaj was making account of the materials and everything, and then, you know, he just thought that why I'm doing this, you know, I should be doing something else. I should be doing direct sadhana. But Prabhupada said that you just do, you know, currently what you have been given, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will personally incarnate in your mind when you pass away. So, yeah, so this management is also not outside of Krishna consciousness, it is a part of preaching, but the problem is in management. See, management and preaching, they have their there is a difference. I mean, it is not directly connected to Krishna consciousness because management may require you to become a bit, you know, shrewd. Sometimes a shrewd person, and you might not experience an ideal devotee through a manager. And I think so that is the reason it's a very tough service which a manager is taking. And it is not because of his, you know, maybe he has to deal with certain situations and he has to take certain decisions based on the overall scenario of the temple. And that is why it seems that he might be a shrewd person. So, yeah, so the chances are there that a person can lose their track from Krishna consciousness if they are in these kind of positions. But if they are humble, and if, as Prabhupada says, that if they follow the regulative principles, if they are very deeply connected with sadhana, then they can become exemplary managers. So, not that, you know, we have only neophyte managers in our ISKCON group, in ISKCON society, we have exalted managers, like whoever is in GBC, whoever is a temple president, they are all managers to some degree. And we know that in GBC there are many sannyasis, and they are exemplary examples of Vaishnavas and at the same time being managers. Okay, so there is a technique of managing things, and but it should, you know, it should be done in a certain parameter. It should not cross beyond the parameter. Okay, and at the same time, they have to be deeply connected with sadhana, because sadhana will only actually give them intelligence and it will save them from taking mature decision, immature decisions. So the ability to discriminate, the intelligence will come when we have strong sadhana. So this is very important. Okay, but yeah, but it should not be seen as an external activity if they are sincerely, genuinely connected to serving the temple. Okay. So any comments or question on this? Okay. See, I mean, it's quite simple that without managers, we cannot manage the temple. We cannot run the temples. If you want to maintain temple, see, you have built a temple. Wonderful. But then the toughest part is to manage it, to maintain it. So unless we have managers, you cannot run the temple. That means manager is taking a very responsible service, a very serious, dedicated service, very important service. So managers, you know, we must have respect for them, you know, the authorities, the managers, and but at the same time, they should not misuse the position, but they have to be very well grounded in sadhana and humility. Okay, next, Mataji.
It appears from these verses that aside from the sun and moon, there is an invisible planet called Rahu. The movements of Rahu causes both solar and lunar eclipses. We suggest that the modern expeditions attempting to reach the moon are mistakenly going to Rahu.
Yeah, so this point was also brought up, you know, in our Bhagavad cosmology class, which was there in my house. And Prabhupada, in one more Bhagavatam Purport, Prabhupada says that he feels that the astronauts that went to the moon, they actually did not go to the moon, but rather they were diverted to the planet Rahu. And because it is not within the purview of our material vision, at least from here, so when they went there, maybe they have probably landed on Rahu planet instead of going to the moon. This is what Prabhupada speaks. So, yeah. So, any comment on this?
Prabhupada's tone here is not very definitive. He says it appears from the verses, he says. So, he's not saying that we know from the verses. He's not saying like that.
Yeah. That's a good observation. He does mention, like, so, you know, especially for the Bhagavad cosmology section, if you see, whenever Prabhupada is commenting on something, he writes like this, that it appears that this place is this, this place is that, or they must have gone here, or they must have gone there. And so similarly, if you remember, you know, in one particular purport which I had quoted, you know, when we had the seminar here, so I had mentioned that, you know, Prabhupada mentioning that Ravana had his kingdom in Brazil because it was discovered recently that there was a lot of gold which was found out there. So Prabhupada says that, so, you know, then he says that this must be Brazil. So Brazil is one of Ravana's kingdom, and he also says that, and even from historical references from the Puranas, we can understand that this must be Brazil. Okay, so now Prabhupada uses this kind of language, especially in Bhagavad cosmology, that it appears or it is like this or probably it is like this. And but one thing is there, that Prabhupada has consistently mentioned this. So it is not that at one place he is just saying that, okay, it appears like this. But throughout, if you see, Prabhupada's stand was, whether in the letter, wherein the purport and multiple places Prabhupada says that actually they must have gone to the Rahu planet. Okay. So he's not saying definitively that they have gone there. See, because maybe one of the reasons is because the entire thing is a very, I think most of the scientists now or most of the people around the world, they have become aware and they also think that they have not gone only there. So Prabhupada, maybe that's the reason he did not use a very definitive word that they have gone to Rahu planet. So maybe Prabhupada, that's why, you know, he's just mentioning it appears that they must have gone to Rahu planet. So when, especially when they're talking about going to the moon, then Prabhupada said it appears that probably they are diverted and they have not gone there. So here Prabhupada is not, you know, I think Prabhupada is also not completely refuting the point that they have not gone to the moon. So one stand of Prabhupada is that they cannot go to the moon. That is not possible. And the scientists are saying they went to the moon. So then Prabhupada is making a compromise here and saying that, okay, it appears that probably they have been diverted to the Rahu planet. So Prabhupada is, you know, both ways he's like quite thorough. That he's fixed in his stand that they cannot go to the moon. But at the same time, if it's a scientifically proven fact that they did go somewhere, then it should be Rahu planet. So this is what actually we understand. Yeah, but it's a good observation, you know, that, yeah, Prabhupada mentions like this at many places, especially commenting on Bhagavad cosmology. So does this make sense?
Okay, Prabhuji. Though in the cosmology class, Prabhuji mentioned that that Lanka was in the Jambu Dvipa somewhere, not on planet Earth.
Yeah, so Prabhuji had mentioned couple of things which were not in agreement with Prabhupada, what he was saying, or maybe he was not willing to reconcile it just because he couldn't. So there are couple of things that he mentioned, and I think he has mentioned from the scriptures. But there are many things that Prabhupada said. He commented on Bhagavad cosmology, which devotees are not yet clear about. So see, basically, when Prabhupada is saying something, and I don't think that Prabhupada did not understand the structure as a whole. Like, you know, for example, so there is the Bharat Varsha, we know that. And then there is the different eight Varshas also, right? We know that on the southern part of Jambudvipa, these are the nine Varshas. And then, the Bhagavatam is also talking about the other nine Varshas surrounding the Bharat Varsha. Because there are further nine divisions in Bharat Varsha, you know, in that tract of land. But then there are other eight Varshas also surrounding Bharat Varsha. Right, we know that Illavarat Varsha, then Ramyanaka Varsha, then Ketumal Varsha. So all these Varshas are surrounding, but they are all part of Jambudvip, right? So now, and so let me give an example. So do you remember, you know, Prabhuji was explaining about that other Varshas apart from Bharat Varsha, there the living entities, the denizens, they are having a span of 10,000 years. And the situation is similar to that of Trita Yuga. Prabhuji was mentioning about three different types of heavenly planets. So one is the Divya Swarg, then the earthly Swarga is called as the Bhoma Swarg, and the lower planetary system, it is called the Bilva Swarg. If you remember, do you recollect that? You know, like all these are actually heavenly planets in one sense. Do you remember?
Yeah. I remember him saying that 10,000 years.
Yeah, so now in Jambudvip, there are other Varshas which are, you know, where the living entities, they are spending 10,000 years only. And there is no influence of time, there is no karma there. Who are residing in those Varshas? The people, the living entities who are falling from the Swarga planets. So after that, they come here to this Jambudipa, Jambudip, that other than Bharat Varsha, they reside in these different Varshas, and after the 10,000 years, they will come to the earthly planet or to Bharat Varsha, where again they will start the cycle of karma. Karma is only existing in Bharat Varsha, that we know. Okay, and this is directly given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Prabhu is not saying something new, it is directly given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, while describing in the Bhagavatam, that Bhagavatam is describing about these eight Varshas, and it is describing about what kind of atmosphere is there. So then Prabhupada says that this type of atmosphere is also there in our Kashmir, which is located in our North India. So see, now if you see, so Prabhupada, you know, he's just making a, you know, he's just given an analogy. How can you perceive transcendental realm? You know that if you go to Kashmir, you will actually experience this kind of, you will get a sense of what is this all about that we are describing, the Bhagavatam is describing. So what is Prabhupada doing? He's not saying that this is Kashmir, that the, you know, the Varshas are Kashmir. Obviously not. And I think Prabhupada very clearly understood, as a neophyte sadhaka, when I can understand, you know, when this graphical presentation is given, the Bhagavatam, when it clearly mentions about these Varshas, I think Prabhupada very clearly understood the entire structure of the cosmology. But then why does he say like these, you know, things? Then when it came to description of the different Varshas, you know, different Varshas in Jambudipa, Prabhupada at one place he writes that, you know, not in the purport, but in the transcendent itself, he is saying that similar to Asia and Europe. So again, see, where what is the location of Asia and Europe here? Asia and Europe, they are in Bharat Khanda. Bharat Khanda is a globe, and Bharat Khanda is in, you know, Bharat Varsha, and Bharat Varsha is a part of Jambudipa. But actually the Bhagavatam is describing something which is beyond Bharat Varsha also. It's not just describing about Bharat Khanda. So then Prabhupada is saying that, okay, this is like, you know, Asia and Europe. So see, actually, so Prabhupada said many things. He commented on Bhagavad cosmology. But, you know, I think he had some, and this is what actually, you know, that is the reason, this is the main reason why I got in touch with Giriraj Maharaj and Brahmatirtha Prabhu. So Giriraj Maharaj, he has discussed similar issues with Devamrit Maharaj on this. And both of them, they agree that when it comes to the activities of a pure devotee, someone who is on the platform of love of Godhead, we cannot use our tiny intelligence and brain, materialistic mind, to analyze why he said certain things. So it's, certain things are beyond our imagination. That's one thing. There have been statements of Prabhupada which apparently seem contradictory to what Prabhupada says in other places. But, you know, recently Jannivas Prabhu, he had reconciled these statements. So what we actually can understand from this is that we cannot immediately jump to a conclusion and say that Prabhupada was wrong or he made some mistakes, he made some error. I see the simple fact that when a person like us, when a devotee like us, they can understand by seeing, by the presentation, we can actually understand what is where and what, how they are located. Prabhupada already knew this. From the Bhagavad itself, Prabhupada could make out. So, it's not possible that Prabhupada could have not, you know, could have made error in his judgment. You know, it's not possible because the picture is very clear to us. It's very clearly described in the Bhagavatam. What are the different Varshas? Okay, so there is no question of, and these Varshas are all different from each other. The very fact that 10,000 years only exist in these eight Varshas, it itself sufficient to prove that any layman can understand that this 8 Varshas, they are separate from this Bharat Varsha. So how can Prabhupada commit a blunder like this? It's not possible. So there is certain, some reason is there, and you know, the Giriraj Maharaj actually writes in the, he explains me that Sadaputa Prabhu, who was you know, called as Dr. Richard Thompson, Prabhupada's disciple, he went to great lengths to reconcile what Prabhupada said and what the Bhagavatam also says. And then that's the reason he also included Brahmatirtha Prabhu in that, because Brahmatirtha Prabhu worked very closely with Sadaputa Prabhu. And Brahmatirtha Prabhu told me that actually Sadaputa, so I don't know how many of you have read Sadaputa Prabhu's work, but his work is extremely analytical and intellectual. It's not for everyone. It's very difficult to understand what he's trying to say. But he, Brahmatirtha Prabhu, did mention to me one thing about him, that Sadaputa Prabhu, he told Brahmatirtha Prabhu that these distances that are given in the Bhagavatam, they are embedded. And now how they are embedded, you know, that's something which, you know, which is, I think, it's a question of revelation. And that's a amazing insight, you know, because embedded means something which is inside, you know, and it just starts to come out. So if you expand it, it will come out. The dimension will actually increase. And when you compress it, you know, the dimension goes up inside. So now, this is a very crucial point. Okay. So Giriraj Maharaj, Devamrit Maharaj, Sadaputa Prabhu, Jananivas Prabhu, Brahmatirtha Prabhu, Mahatma Prabhu, Dhrutkarma Prabhu. Dhrutkarma Prabhu is also a geologist, archaeologist, sorry. Brahmatirtha Prabhu is a geologist. They all say that whatever Prabhupada said, we cannot neglect it. Okay, we cannot just say that he made a mistake or he didn't understand. In fact, that can become an aparadh also. You know, one has to be 100% sure if Prabhupada made a mistake, he has to prove it. If he cannot prove, he is treading on the risky path. And another thing, I will tell you one thing. The reason why we no longer have his seminar is that he has clearly offended Prabhupada. I have got written, responses from Giriraj Maharaj and even from Dhrutkarma Prabhu saying that, you know, because I have explained to him the situation, and they both mentioned very clearly that this, you know, see, first of all, you are giving seminar because of Prabhupada. You are here because of Prabhupada. How can you say Prabhupada committed a mistake or he was only giving us bhakti or he didn't know the Shastra? How can you say that? Who are you to say that? I see, in an assembly of devotees, very strongly was saying these things. And then after this, you know, what he said, I asked him two questions. I said, if you are saying bhakti element, Prabhupada is only giving bhakti element, then why Prabhupada has to give these other elements also? Prabhupada is only concerned about bhakti, so then why he has to, so if Prabhupada didn't do something, he should just ignore it. Why he has to give other things also when he does not know it? That is the first question. And second question is that, so are you trying to say that Prabhupada didn't know Shastra? What is your, you know, what are you trying to convey here? You know, when I went down with him, I asked him, so from whom are you taking guidance? Who is your, you know, from under whom you have learned this cosmology? And you know, he said, I have not learned anyone. It's my own effort. I told him, can you make sure that whatever you are saying, it is according to Guru Sadhu Shastra? He couldn't answer anything. He couldn't answer my question. You know, one more thing. He was quoting with a lot of confidence this Bhugal Varnanam, which is described by one of the Acharya in the Ramanuja Sampradaya. Tell me one thing, what is the assurance that what that Acharya says you could have also made a mistake while analyzing the structure of the universe. What is the guarantee? He is minimizing Prabhupada's position, and then he is glorifying the position of that Ramanuja Sampradaya Acharya, saying that, you know, he because of him we get this Bhugol, you know, or see, interesting thing is, he is quoting this Acharya, he is not quoting Shastra for this. So when he is having so much faith, he is not having faith in Prabhupada. Anyways, the point is, you know, even if you are not sure if Prabhupada made a mistake or not, let's assume that. But the way that he presented, you know, in the assembly of devotees, and very strongly he said this point, and he was not doing it once. I observed it, he was doing it couple of times. He did it couple of times. And whenever I was quoting Prabhupada letters, he was just taking it for granted. He was just ignoring it. Then when especially when after the class, when we sat around him, and when he specifically mentioned that Prabhupada only gave bhakti, that bhakti element, he just wanted to connect and he just gave bhakti element, then I got really upset. I said, something is going wrong here. I have to, you know, make sure that. So at least it should be done in a very respectful way. He is an Acharya. Prabhupada is an Acharya. You are here because of Prabhupada. You are a devotee because of Prabhupada. You are all, you know, even if you present these things, if you, you know, if you say about Prabhupada like this, your entire knowledge will be zero. Just like, you know, Balram, you know, he killed Romarsana Sutta with a blade of grass. That Romarsana Sutta was blessed by all the devotees. Even after the blessings of the Vaishnavas, he was killed by Balram. Can you imagine? This is a very contrary situation. He was blessed by all the Vaishnavas. He was especially empowered by Vyasdev, because Vyasdev taught him. And it is not customary to get up when you are sitting on the Vyasasan. When anyone comes, no matter whoever comes, you are not supposed to get up to greet the person. But, you know, the situation here was different. It was the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. So he did not stand. And just by this little impudent activity, Balram killed him instantly. So the conclusion is, if you have the guts to say like this about an Acharya, you have to be ready with serious consequences. So it should be done. So, you know, he could have just said that, okay, Prabhupada said certain things, I am not sure, like why he said, I'm not able to understand, it's beyond my you know, imagination. Jananivas Prabhu, he wrote a brilliant answer to me. He wrote that whatever Prabhupada says, whatever our Acharya says, we follow that. We accept that. He clearly wrote that. Whatever our Acharya or whatever Prabhupada will say, even though it may be contrary, and this is the common response from all the Prabhupada disciples. They have pointed out this very clearly, that whenever there is a contradiction between Prabhupada and other Acharyas, we defer to Prabhupada. Or we accept what Prabhupada has said, and we follow what Prabhupada has said. It's a common response from everyone. And Jananivas Prabhu also mentioned that if you say that one Acharya is right, other is wrong, you are committing apradh. And it was Jananivas Prabhu who reconciled many things. What, you know, apparently we thought that Prabhupada said about a few things. So anyways, you know, somehow the topic came of Bhagavad Cosmology. That's the reason I had to share all these things. But so we have to be careful that we don't minimize Prabhupada's position just because you are not able to understand. Okay. And if, see, this is a safe path. I can assure you that this is a safe path. If you have doubt that Prabhupada made a mistake, you are probably on a risky path because you are not sure. And if you give the benefit of doubt that, okay, like, I don't think Prabhupada made a mistake. And if there is a mistake, it will be revealed to us later on. So that's a very safe path. So we are not doubting the, we are not doubt creating doubts in the, you know, in our chastity to Prabhupada. So it is not just about Vedic cosmology or Bhagavad cosmology. Even in many other areas, some devotees, they feel that Prabhupada made some mistakes. And so it's a, so if you remember, just half an hour ago, I was talking about, you know, principles and details, that how there is difference of opinion. You know, so it's a very important point that if devotees, they are not faithful to Prabhupada like this, so it's really going to be tough. Okay. Yes, Prabhu, you are saying something.
No, I just was agreeing that that safe path thing that you mentioned, that is, I think, also the best choice.
Yeah, that is the safest and the best choice. And I will tell you, Prabhu, I will tell you one more thing. See, it is not just that I am taking a safe path. It is with my intelligence and with my conviction. Okay. And because when I, you know, when I have read Prabhupada Leelas, when I have heard about Prabhupada Leelas, what kind of personality he was, you will feel that Prabhupada was such a person, he could use anything in Krishna service. When there was a time required for him to display mystic potency, he would use that very clearly, very openly, he used to do that. Many, many devotees have shared their experiences. That is the reason we have this Prabhupada Leela class. So that, you know, I will keep sharing, you know, what devotees, how they have found Prabhupada's mystic potency many times. And how, you know, that's the reason Tamal Krishna Maharaj also said, he, you know, in the beginning he said very clearly that because, so he, you know, he starts with this. He says that Prabhupada knew everything. And why did Prabhupada, how does Prabhupada know everything? He is not omniscient, he is not God. So Maharaj says that Prabhupada knew everything because he knew Krishna. And because Krishna knows everything, that's why he provided Prabhupada with the required knowledge at the right time. And that is the reason then he says later on that although Prabhupada did put personal efforts behind the study of scriptures, but it's not just about studying scriptures. It is also about realization. It is about revelation from the Lord. So, see, now there is a concept called as, you know, everyone agrees and everyone knows Prabhupada is a Saktavesh Avatar. So do you really believe that he was a Saktavesh Avatar? What is the meaning of Saktavesh Avatar? He is not just a Mahabhagavat, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, they are personally entering the body of Prabhupada. Can you understand this difference? It's a very big thing. It's a very unique thing. You will not find, there are many Mahabhagavats, but when the Lord is personally empowering or entering the body, Avesh, Sakti Avesh, the Sakti of the Lord is entering the body of a devotee, he becomes a very special devotee. You know, there is a pastime in Chaitanya Bhagavat where, I think I have narrated this pastime probably, that when you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is testing Ishwarapuri, I'm sorry. He's, you know, so from this pastime, Mahaprabhu is, he wants to glorify the position of Ishwarapuri. So what he does, he arranges a pastime in which Ishwarapuri, he has written a book, which is called as, Krishna Lilamrit. Yeah, Krishna Lilamrit is the name of the book. He writes that book and he goes to Mahaprabhu. And then he tells Mahaprabhu that please find out some mistakes from this book. And then first of all, Mahaprabhu is not willing to accept that there are mistakes in the book. And he's saying that please don't allow me to make offenses by saying whatever you write, You know, you are an exalted Vaishnava. You are a pure devotee. You are my guru. Whatever you are writing, Krishna accepts it. In spite of various other, you know, things, the Lord will accept your work and there is no question of any mistake. But still, Ishwarapuri insisted Mahaprabhu that please no, you please go and find out some mistake. And then, so then he, you know, because being a disciple, he has to agree. So then he goes and next day he comes and he is finding some mistake. And then he tells Ishwarapuri that this is what, you know, there is some error in this word and you have not used it properly here. And then Ishwarapuri goes through it and then he sees and he says, no, actually I am not wrong, but you are wrong because this is the right context in which I have used this word. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu again sees that and he becomes very happy because he is defeated. And then he broadly declares that whoever tries to find mistake in Ishwarapuri's work will be doomed. Or whoever tries to find a fault or mistake with a pure devotee, you know, they will be doomed. There is no mistake, there is no fault. Okay, so now, you know, so sometimes, you know, these devotees, they call this as a transcendental mistake. Just because the mistake or just because they cannot accept certain things, what Prabhupada said. So, you know, this is basically a transcendental mistake and they assign some kind of human side to Prabhupada. That Prabhupada was also a human being. Why not he can? Yeah, he was, you know, he was a jiva, but he was empowered jiva. And at the same time, he was not like an ordinary jiva. That is for sure. So, okay. So, we don't expect that Prabhupada was perfect in everything materialistic, you know, things. Like, for example, English, grammar, or, you know, whatever is connected to the material world, the facts and figures of the material world. Many times Prabhupada consulted devotees for certain things. Many times Prabhupada, when he said something about, you know, a material situation, and then some devotee interrupted and said, no, Prabhupada, actually it is like this. And Prabhupada accepted it. So, okay, yeah, we do realize that, you know, the acharya or the guru or the pure devotee, they can probably get wrong things about the material facts and figures. But when it comes to commenting on the Shastra, it's a very crucial and critical topic. It's for the simple fact that, where, you know, why he has to provide wrong information or why he has to provide speculative information to us. It will confuse us more and more. Very simple. I mean, you know, many times Prabhupada, when he was approached, if he didn't do something, he would just say, okay, you know, you can refer to my godbrother or you refer to this. Prabhupada didn't say that, okay, according to me, I think it should be like this. Prabhupada never speculated like that. If he knew something, he wrote with conviction. If he didn't know something, he could have expressed very clearly. Here, nowhere, you know, we find Prabhupada, you know, in any place, he's saying that, you know, when it comes to Bhagavad cosmology or when it comes to this particular topic, please don't accept my words and refer to someone else. That's ridiculous. You know, no one will do like that. Because the fact is that if he does not know something, he will not write it. Why he has to confuse people? So, anyways, you know, so this is something, you know, going on in ISKCON currently, and I think this is assigned to the Shastric Advisory Committee currently. They are working on this. But yeah, you know, my personal conviction and all these proper disciples that I've named, they all have this conviction that that it's just that we do not understand what Prabhupada said. No, so we cannot directly say, and then what to speak of saying in an assembly of devotees very strongly. And Giriraj Maharaj clearly mentioned to me that this certainly minimizing the position of Prabhupada. So, yeah, it's a, you know, very important thing currently. I, you know, I'm like in touch with them, and maybe, you know, something might come up in the future about this. So, are there questions on this? Any comments? Ujwala Mataji, you would like to say something? Did you hear similar thing earlier?
No, from Ji.
Huh?
No, Prabhuji, that Bhagavad cosmology, what you are talking, I did not hear also.
Okay, no, but have you heard of something like this before, that Prabhupada has, you know, he made mistakes, he committed mistakes in his writings?
So far, no. No. I was not aware.
Exactly. And you know, if you remember, Mataji, you had sent me one question from Bhagavatam Parpat related to Bhishma Pitama's remembering of the Ashwamedh Yajna or the Ratsuya Yajna, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of the purports where devotees, they are unable to find any answer.
Mm. Yes.
See, now even, you know, when you go through the purport, I have gone through it twice.
Yes.
What?
No, Prabhu, continue, Prabhu.
Yeah, so I have gone through the purport a couple of times, and you know, one thing I have noticed that, see, generally, if we are making mistakes, then the mistakes will arise if probably we have forgotten something. Generally, you know, the most of the mistakes that come is because we forget something, okay? That is the only scope of making mistakes. Otherwise, if you don't know something, how will you write? How can you write something speculative? Especially for an acharya like Prabhupada, when he knows that his books are going to be the law books for the next 10,000 years. And if he writes something like this, which is completely wrong, won't he be criticized by outsiders? See, there are not just, you know, ISKCON is not just the Vaishnava, only Vaishnava Sampradaya. There is the other three Vaishnava Sampradayas. In Gaudiya Math, we have so many divisions. And many devotees, they are scholarly. They can easily collect all these points. And they can criticize Prabhupada for this. You know, and they can make a statement that your Acharya, you know, you are glorifying him, you are putting him in such a high position. But he has seriously committed a lot of mistakes in his commentaries. So there is no scope. I mean, it's not possible. And if you read, you know, agreed that we don't understand. Because the Ratsuya Yajna happened before, you know, before the war, right? And then Bhishma Pitama was, you know, he was lying, and that happened when he was, you know, that the confrontation that took place between Arjuna and Bhishma, and then, so after that, when he's recollecting, he's remembering the Ratsuya Yajna. But then Prabhupada is actually talking about Ashwamedh, you know, actually he's talking about Ratsuya Yajna, and it seems that there were two types of Ratsuya Yajna, although one Ratsuya Yajna is defining as Ashwamedh Yajna. He's not writing as Ashwamedh Yajna, but you know, he's also mentioning in the purport that he left the horse, and after that, you know, whoever captured the horse, they had to fight with the Pandavas. But this Ashwamedh Yajna happened after the Mahabharata war. So how is it, and any common man, any layman also knows about these things, you know? How can Prabhupada, and there is no context also. See, he is mixing up these things where there is no context also. So definitely something has to be there. And you know, see, we also say that, like for example, the Bhagavatam also talks about contrary things. It is talking about the black, the white incarnation of boar, it is talking about the red incarnation of boar. So now again, it is confusing. But then Acharyas explain that it's talking about different kalpas. So, and the Acharyas also say that while narrating the Bhagavatam, Sukhdev Goswami, because of his trance, he will mix kalpas. He will give information from different kalpas. So then, it is also possible that Prabhupada could have mixed up certain things. Or maybe something is there which we are yet to be revealed of. You know, so it is possible that from different kalpas, things are presented, which is beyond our understanding at that point of time. Or it is also possible that it may have happened in the same kalpa, but it might be revealed in some other. Like, you know, I do remember one typical example, a very, very relevant example of my Guru Maharaj, Radhanath Maharaj. So in one of his lectures, when it was Sita Navami day, sorry, it was Radha Ashtami day, and Maharaj, when he began his class, he said that Radharani was also discovered in a similar way how Sita Maya was also discovered, you know, by plowing that field. And then suddenly, you know, they saw that a small child is there, very effulgent child is there, and that's how both of them were discovered. So now Radhanath Maharaj, for a moment, he thought, because he heard this from Prabhupada's lecture. So this is how Prabhupada described the appearance of Srimati Radharani. Okay. So now Radhanath Maharaj thought that maybe Prabhupada got mixed up with the birth of Sita. And maybe he's just, you know. So then, after a few years, he read the same pastime in Padma Puran, how Radharani was discovered. And in Padma Puran, it is mentioned like this, that when Vrishbhanu Maharaj went for plowing, that time somehow his plow, it hit the ground and, you know, it actually touched Radharani. And that's how, you know, Radharani was actually discovered, or she appeared like that. So then Maharaj said that I realized that Prabhupada is perfect. So it's a matter of time, you know. We cannot immediately jump to any conclusion just because we are aware of one side of the picture. There are multiple sides of picture and we have to see many things. So there are different kalpas, different activities happen in different kalpas. So we have to reconcile from all these angles. Okay. Otherwise one has to really prove that whatever, and then, you know, the question is then why only Prabhupada? If you are talking about an acharya making a mistake, this can also happen to previous acharyas. It can also happen to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. It can also happen to Jiva Goswami. But no one will agree on that. All these acharyas, they can make mistake. That means that they are all presenting, you know, they are making mistakes on the commentary of Shastra. Ridiculous. What is the, you know, why are we reading? And so if someone says that no, they cannot make mistake, only Prabhupada can mistake, that's another ridiculous thing to say. That means clearly they are minimizing the position of Prabhupada. When Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami personally gave darshan to Prabhupada in Radha Damodar, he personally told, and his own Guru Maharaj, he told him that you work in the way Vishwanath Thakur, Narottam Das Thakur, they have worked. Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami personally blessed Srila Prabhupada to write. So actually, and then we also know that Prabhupada gave the essence of the Acharya's commentaries. You know, so one devotee, you know, he says that, you know, it's not wrong to say, or it is not offensive to say that Jiva Goswami knew more than what Prabhupada knew. The way Jiva Goswami presented philosophy, Prabhupada could not present. And Prabhupada didn't knew the philosophy. That's really something. I think it will require a lot of courage, a lot of, because it's a very risky path, you know, to say all these things. It's a simple question. If Jiva Goswami, let's say, so the point of contention was that Jiva Goswami, he was the most knowledgeable person, or let's say he had the most knowledge on Shastra. Okay. So my argument was that, okay, let's assume Jiva Goswami is the most knowledgeable person in the Shastra. And according to you, if he is perfect in his commentary, why are we referring to other Acharya works? why we are not only referring to Jiva Goswami, why we are referring to Rupa Goswami also. Why we are referring to other Goswamis and other Acharyas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, all these, so many books Bhaktivinoda Thakur has published, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur has published. Why are we referring to them? If you are saying by material calculation that Jiva Goswami is the highest, he had the highest amount of knowledge, there is no denying that he was the greatest scholar in the entire planet. But see, there is a difference. When you talk about scholarship, yes, Jiva Goswami probably was the leader amongst all other Acharya Goswamis. But when it comes to presenting spiritual topics are merely based on the fact of revelation. It has nothing to do with mundane scholarship. We know this fact very clearly. And Shastra clearly says that only to those who have implicit faith and Guru and the Lord simultaneously, the purpose of Vedas will be revealed to such people. So do you think that Jiva Goswami, because he is the only scholar, that's why, it's not about that. It's about revelation. That is the reason we refer to all the Acharya works, because we think that they have made an important contribution, that Krishna reveals himself through all these different Acharyas to us. So the fact that, you know, and you know what to speak, then I also made another argument that obviously now, see, so Jiva Goswami, and see, for this reason, there is the Jiva Goswami Institute. And the founder of that institute is our own ISKCON devotee, ex-ISKCON devotee. Just because of this, he started this Jiva Goswami Institute, thinking that Jiva Goswami is the ultimate authority, so we will only follow the teaching of Jiva Goswami. So they emphasize a lot on following Jiva Goswami's teachings. Okay. Now, another question is that if you think that material knowledge is the requirement, then currently also we have seen the most scholarly devotees, the scholarly, most Sanskrit scholarly devotees we have seen, they have left ISKCON. They were in ISKCON, but they left ISKCON. Why? Because they presented many things which were completely different. You know, this Radhakrishna Brahmachari, he came to a conclusion, even in spite of such a huge scholar in the entire ISKCON community, he came up with a conclusion that one cannot become a guru if he is born in a non-Brahminical family. Now, every devotee in ISKCON knows, from Shastra, they can quote Shastra also, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very clearly said that, you know, whether a person is Sudra or whether he is, you know, Vipra, Sudra, whatever it is, whoever knows the science of Krishna, whoever knows the Tattva of Krishna, they can become Gurus. And Sanatana Goswami in Hardi Bhakti Vilas very clearly mentions that by initiation, by the spiritual master, from even though they are born in the Malicha family, they immediately come to the Vaishnava platform, which is even beyond the Brahminical platform. This person, can you just imagine, the ISKCON leaders, the top ISKCON leaders, they were taking his guidance on Shastric matters. And he got, he got so much deviated that he came up with a conclusion where he said that one cannot become a guru. So basically what he meant, he specifically was targeting foreign gurus, that they are not bona fide. And then finally, because of, you know, he presented 30 statements that were completely deviating from what, you know, the principles of ISKCON or Prabhupada's teachings. So he left ISKCON. He has started his own organization, and he has become the Acharya in that, the founder Acharya. And I recently saw a picture, you know, he has his hands raised like this. He is giving blessings to everyone. Such kind of picture even Prabhupada never took, where he is raising his hand and, you know, blessing the entire world. So you can just imagine the position. So one thing is very clear, that scholarly knowledge, it does not reveal anything in spiritual life. It does not have, mundane scholarship has no position. Only sincere submissive attitude, that is sufficient. And I think, you know, I will also share another, just today I read one article. Prabhupada, when he heard That is, God brothers were chastising his disciples in Vrindavan because they are not aware of Sanskrit or they are not able to pronounce Sanskrit. Prabhupada was very upset. And Prabhupada immediately said, where in the Shastra it is stated that one who cannot chant Sanskrit or does not know Sanskrit cannot go back to Godhead? Where it is said? So you can just imagine. See, that is the reason the conclusion of the Shastra is revealed only to those who have implicit faith in Guru and the Lord. You have to understand this fact very thoroughly. It is not because of mundane scholarship. So Prabhupada, now who is a better example than Prabhupada, who is completely fitting this definition of implicit faith? Akinchan Krishnadas Babaji, who is Prabhupada's god brother, who was very exalted Vaishnav, one time, you know, he told our Prabhupada disciple that, do you know what is the reason your Guru Maharaj became successful and why only he became successful? And he said, he revealed that, because I saw that your Guru Maharaj had implicit faith in the holy name and implicit faith in the instructions of spiritual master. That is the reason he is the only one who took the holy name to every nook and corner of the world. Right? So this is the thing, you know, finally it's all about revelation. It is not about mundane scholarship. That means, you know, if mundane scholarship plays a role, that means the greatest knowledge a person has, that means he's the acharya in the movement, because everyone is supposed to follow his instructions because he has the highest knowledge amongst everyone. But that's we all know that's a false conception. Nowhere in the Shastra it is supported. Okay, and Krishna obviously he is concerned with the devotee's devotion. He is not concerned with the scholarship. So is this clear? Does this make sense to everyone?
Yes, Prabhuji, the point is taken.
Prabhuji, just one question I want to ask. Rajshekhar Brahmachari, he's the one who has written those books on Vrindavan guide map and Radha Kund and Govardhan. Is it the same person?
No. I have not heard about him, but I know some devotees who have this kind of view. And so amongst Prabhupada disciple, amongst a guru and sannyasi, I know one of them, and I won't name him. To my utter surprise, some of our god brothers, they have this concept. And so I'm not sure if Maharaj is aware of this, but I'm working on this, and it's something which is very important actually. I think, you know, in the future also, that is the reason even Giriraj Maharaj is also concerned. You know, he's quite concerned about this. So that's the reason he's replying, you know, he's investing time on this. Otherwise, normally I would not approach him also, you know, for some ordinary topics. But because this was a very crucial topic, so I had written to him. And I have also written to Shivram Maharaj. You know, I am waiting for his response. But I do remember Shivram Maharaj also had made one very similar point in his podcast earlier when I had asked him a question. So he said he had made very clear that whatever Prabhupada says, we have to accept it. We cannot neglect it. And we cannot say that, you know. In fact, Mahatma Prabhu even told me just recently that Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj, who is Prabhupada's god brother, for him, you know, he used to put a guru above the Shastra also. You know, I am not sure if everyone is aware of Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj's position, very, very dear to Prabhupada. They were very intimate friends, and Prabhupada glorified him many times. So he was a pure Vaishnava, you know, a very exalted disciple of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj, he used to view the position of Guru as someone who is also above the Shastra. That means that Guru's words or what he says, even Shastras, they become subservient of that. So, anyways, you know, like many things are there, but I mean, I am just concerned that, you know, this will have some serious consequences later on. You know, if his Prabhupada's position is minimized, then I think it will be a challenge for ISKCON. So, yeah, Ujjwala Mataji, any comment?
Yes, Anupamji, please.
Yeah, so anyway, whatever I've shared, like, does it make sense? Or some devotees feel that they have some more doubt or some more questions on this?
No, Prabhuji, it's very clear.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Aritra, are you there? I don't know if he's there, but maybe he's listening. So you know, this is the reason why training is so important. Why we have to cultivate devotees' faith in our acharya. Otherwise, later on there will be serious problems. I mean, ISKCON, they have, you know, ISKCON devotees in the past, they have made very serious mistakes, because obviously, you know, because they are not aware of many things. But I think they have grown up and they have learned. They have gone under the experience, and then they have learned a lot of things from their experience. So now is a time, you know, when there are many scholarly devotees in ISKCON and many mature devotees also. But one consistent response I got from all Prabhupada disciples is that whenever there is a difference, we defer to Prabhupada. So that way it is really good, you know, that it's very important. So we can stop now, and we will continue next week. Aritra had invited me to speak on behalf of ISKCON Orlando. So we'll be having a live session, Facebook session, on Sunday, next Sunday, from 10 to 11 p.m. IST. So if you are able to make it, then you're most welcome. I will send the details. This is the first time I think it will be live session. And first time through ISKCON Orlando. So Saturday we'll be having our Corona class, and we'll try to somehow, you know, I will try to adjust if we can do this class from Prabhupada Leela class from 8 to 10 or 8 to 9:30 or 9:45, like that, and then I can you know, give that class also. So okay, so thank you all the devotees for joining. Hare Krishna, Dhanot Ram.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Ramji. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.